"My dear sir," this was Anderson, "may I anticipate my friend's question? If this is so, why did you not heave to when required and permit a search of your vessel?" Spring made noises in his throat. "Do I have to tell an American court of all places? I responded to a signal to heave to from an American vessel in precisely the manner in which an American captain would have replied to a similar demand from a British naval ship. In short, sir, I defied it." There was a great shout of laughter from the public benches, and feet drummed on the floor in applause. The little adjudicator hammered his desk, and when all was fairly quiet, Anderson asked,
"As the British captain of a Mexican vessel, you saw no reason to heave to."
"Quite so." And he invited Clitheroe with a cocked eyebrow. Clitheroe smiled. "Captain Spring, you say you brought palm oil from Dahomey to Roatan. Why then was your ship rigged with slave shelves?" "Slave shelves, as you call them, are a convenient way of stowing palm oil panniers," says Spring. "Ask any merchant skipper." "And they're also convenient for stowing slaves," says Clitheroe. "There were, according to the affidavit we have heard, Negroes aboard your ship, about a dozen women. They were found on deck, with slave shackles beside them. Evidence will be given that they had been chained, and that you had been preparing to cast them overboard to destroy the evidence of your crime." He paused, and there wasn't a sound in court. "You are on oath, Captain Spring. Who were those women?" Spring stuck out his jaw, considering. Then he answered, and the words hit the court like a thunderclap. "Those women," says he deliberately, "were slaves." Clitheroe gaped at him. There was a gasp from the public benches, and then a great tumult, hushed at last by the adjudicator, who now turned to Spring. "You admit you were carrying slaves?"
"I've never denied it."
Spring was quite composed.
"Well, sir,"
the adjudicator looked about him,
"I have been in error. I thought that was what your counsel had been vigorously denying on your behalf."
Anderson got to his feet.
"Not precisely, sir. May I suggest that my client be allowed to stand down for a moment while my friend continues with his case?"
"Frankly, sir," says Clitheroe, "it seems my case is made. I move for an order of confiscation and condemnation against the Balliol College, proved to be a slave trader on her own master's words."
"Not quite proved," says Anderson, "if I may invite my friend to provide the corroboration which he doubtless has at command."
Clitheroe looked at the adjudicator, and the adjudicator shrugged, and Clitheroe shuffled his papers and muttered to Dunn. For the life of me, I couldn't fathom it. Spring appeared to have thrown away his case, his ship, his liberty, perhaps even his neck. It made no sense. Clitheroe didn't like it. You could see he smelled a rat. But presently, he shrugged ill-humoredly and picked up his papers.